Hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heater's Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, the Miami Heat. Quick apologies, this is a day later than I usually do it. I just literally got next to no sleep Sunday night because of a massive headache. So rather than sound like a zombie yesterday, I just did my prep yesterday and now I'm recording early today. So, on the docket for today, though, we got the last four games of the regular season to go through a little bit quicker than I hope I usually do it. And then the middle segment, we'll talk about whether or not the Heat can make a deep playoff run from the play-in, since though there was a chance, they did ultimately still end up in the play-in. And then the last part, we'll preview the first play-in game at Philadelphia tomorrow night. But first, we go back to last week's set of games. Miami finished out the last week of the regular season going 3-1, bringing their overall final record 46-36, which is actually an improvement. I didn't want to double-check that real quick. But actually an improvement over last year's record, where they were 44-38. So kind of interesting, right? Like, they end up in the 8th seed this year with a better record than they were last year when they were in the 7th seed. So I guess it just shows that the East kind of contracted a little bit in the middle. Because obviously the top end's definitely not there. Only Boston's up there by themselves with like a 10-game gap or whatever it was in the end. But back to on track, though. 3-1 week. First game, we go back last Tuesday at the Atlanta Hawks, a game that Miami won in double overtime, 117-111. For the injury report on this, Duncan Robinson and Terry Rozier would be out the entire week. I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, like I mentioned last time, the chances were so minimal. It makes sense to rest those players, let the other core eight pretty much just get some run. So Tyler Hero would start in place of Duncan Robinson. That makes sense. And then Caleb Martin would start in place of Terry Rozier. I guess technically, like, it is that kind of weird positionless thing. Maybe Hero's technically the starting point guard and Caleb's secondly the starting two guard. However you want to arrange it, that was the starting backcourt in place of Duncan and Rozier. And you see what Spo's going with here. We're like, all right, let's at least put Caleb more defensive. He doesn't have to worry about offensive production. He can just find his spots. And also, I think a little bit of a preview towards, or at least building towards, what Miami is probably going to try to do against Philly. But I'll come back to that part a little bit later on when we're doing the preview to Philly. But for this game against the Hawks, to keep getting off track, Duncan and Rozier out all week as well. Hero and Caleb would be starting in place of them all week. Recap for this Hawks game itself. Jimmy led the way early on, getting the Heat up 3 after the first quarter. Miami kept the lead throughout the second, building on it in the closing minutes to be up 12 going into the half. Feeling pretty good. But halfway through the third quarter, the Heat went 4 minutes without a bucket, letting the Hawks climb back in and tie the game going into the fourth quarter. And then the fourth quarter itself, the Heat just couldn't pull away, only scoring 21 points, though the other team, the Hawks, also score only 21 points. And then the game would go to overtime. First overtime, pretty bad. Only 6 points scored between them, which then led to a second overtime. And then second overtime, Hero and Highsmith scored the first 6 points, giving Miami enough of a cushion that they were eventually able to hold on for the win. Congratulations, great. Player of the game for this one, I give to Tyler Hero. 33 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists on 13-25 from the field, 4-13 from 3-point range. So doing great inside the 3-point line, a little below where we would like him outside. But 3-4 from the free throw line as well. Just provided consistent scoring. It was like, I want to say like 5 to 9 points every single quarter. And then, like I mentioned in overtime, got some big buckets. An overall great game from Tyler Hero. Again, especially considering he had to then go right back into the starting lineup. Some interesting stats from this game. Miami won mainly off of shooting, going 42-88 from the field, good for 48%. To the Hawks, 45 of 113, good for 40%. Just to say that again, Miami 88 field goal attempts, the Hawks 113. 25 more field goal attempts, which came from Miami losing the turnover battle 18-15, losing offensive rebounds 5-17. That's the big one, plus 12 potential attempts off of that. And then winning the free throw battle, Miami going 15-21, good for 71%, to the Hawks 11-14. So plus 7 on free throw attempts as well. So that's where some of those ended up being more free throw attempts for us. They ended up being field goal attempts for the Hawks. So, but ultimately it came down to just shooting better than them. And it was close. That's how you get to double overtime. But those were the things that you know, one big in Miami's favor, and then a bunch of things in the Hawks' favor to get to overtime. And then honorable mention for this game, Nikola Jovic, 23 points, 8 rebounds, 1 assist, playing 40 minutes, including all the closing minutes and overtime. So again, we're seeing that continual trust from Spoelstra in him, and it's paying off because, yeah, he got the win. And then Jimmy Butler, 25 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, with 10 points in the first quarter, 10 points in the fourth. Just, you know, good game from Jimmy overall. Just ultimately, I gave it to Hero for the overall better production, still being efficient, went right back into the starting role, and then a big role in overtime. Moving on from this game, though, now to the following one, a back-to-back, though not road back-to-back at least. They would come home for the second night. But a double overtime game though on the first night is just setting you up for failure on the second night. And sure enough, last Wednesday, hosting the Mavericks, a game that the Heat got whooped 92-111. Looking at the injury report, pretty much the same core eight from the Atlanta game, with one difference that I didn't get to. Patty Mills ended up playing like 10, 11-ish minutes in that Hawks game. He got replaced in this rotation against the Mavs by DeLon Wright. I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm dubious about what Patty Mills can provide for the Heat at this point, whereas I very clearly see what DeLon Wright brings. But keep on going, though. Recap for this game. Heat caught an early break with Luka catching 3 fouls in the first quarter. And it's like, all right, yes, it's second night of the back-to-back, but maybe they could actually build upon this. No, Kyrie Irving instead just shouldered the offensive load, torching Miami in the closing minutes of the first quarter to have the Mavs up 9. Then with Luka back in the second quarter, the Mavs just kept on rolling. Heat had their deficit as high as 25, but it eventually settled at 22 at halftime. You're not feeling too great. Again, second night of a back-to-back when you played double OT, like the legs just aren't going to be there. You needed to get out strong early, not fall behind that much. Miami's defense was much better in the third, but the offense couldn't capitalize on that, though the Heat would trim the lead down to 14 going into the fourth. And then early in the fourth, the Heat did get it to single digits, as close as 8. But between second night of the back-to-back and then the Mavericks defense just clamping down, it was double digits building up to what was eventually what was a 19-point loss. So that part sucks. Player of the game here, I give to Kevin Love. 16 points, 11 rebounds, no assists or anything else on 6-9 from the field, 4-5 from three-point range, a team-high minus 1. About the best mix of consistency and production that was available that night. Stats from this game. Lost field goal battle. 43 of 87 for the Mavericks, good for 49%, to 33 of 81, good for 41% for the Heat. Lost turnovers, 7-15. Lost points off of turnovers, 8-19. And then only Tyler Hero broke 20 points for the Heat. Like, the Heat, he was the only 20-point scorer for the Heat and did not do so efficiently. So just one of those nights, like, wasn't really anything good going the Heat's favor. And the things that were really going bad their favor, just, I mean, you can't overcome that kind of stuff. Honorable mentions here, scraping the barrel, really, for trying to find something positive from this game. But Jaime Jaquez, 2-2 from three-point range. I have noticed a tendency for defenses now where Jaime Jaquez drives into the paint, defenses collapse down on the paint, and then when he goes to vacate, because, say, like Jimmy or Hero or somebody else is going to be driving into the paint, his defender is pretty much just sagging and is staying in the paint to be a help defender, while Jaquez is then spacing back out to the three-point line. And essentially, that's where you end up where you see a lot of these same situations where the ball gets kicked out to Jaquez for a wide-open three. And especially over the last few months, he has struggled to make that shot and make the defenses pay for doing that, so therefore the defenses are going to continue that course of action. So here, we at least see some signs of life for the three-pointer, and if you can get that knocking down, well, then you put the defense in that situation of that help defender is either going to have to vacate the paint to stay with Jaquez to the three-point line, or Jaquez hurts him from three-point line. So, again, scraping the barrel, but I tried to find something positive there. Then we go on to the last two games of the regular season. These ones are going to be fairly quick, the Raptors games. First Friday, Miami hosted the Raptors in a game that they won 125-103. This is a Raptors team that wants to lose. They want to lose. That is how they keep their pick. If outside of the players, who obviously players don't typically tank, but outside of that, like, everybody else in that organization wants to lose. So this helped. Injury report. Same core 8, DeLon back to round out 9. Recap for this game, after a sluggish start, Heat got online to take and build a lead up 11 after the first. Miami's lead hovered around double digits most of the second, But a late 7-0 run pushed it up 18 before settling at plus 16 at the half. So again, moving in the right direction. Third quarter, Heat held the Raptors at arm's length, up double digits throughout, closing strong to be up 17. And then the fourth quarter, a flurry of early buckets in the fourth put Miami up 21. And then essentially the game just cruised from there, because again, the Raptors did not want to get back into this game. They're like, oh, you're beating the mess out of us? Thank you very much. We'll just go ahead and call it an early night. Player of the game here, Nikola Jovic, 22 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, on 9-18 from the field, 4-10 from 3-point range. Rather quietly, because I haven't been paying too much attention to it, he's shooting around 40% from 3, and the volume is getting up there, so gotta love that. No free throw attempts this game, but that's fine. But did all that work in only 27 minutes and led the team in scoring, because again, everything kind of got really spread around. So props to Jovic. Like, he really stood out and looks like all the development that the Heat have been putting into him for the last 2 years has really paid off. Stats for this game, Miami won 3-point shootings, going 17 of 41, good for 42%, to the Raptors 10 of 31, good for 32%. So plus 7 on made threes, it's a big thing in Miami's favor. One turnover, 17 to 4, and points off a turnover, 17 to 8. Again, you just kind of whoop the mess out of them. That's where it was. Honorable mentions here, Jaquez, a phenomenal game for him. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, 1 block on 7 of 15 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3-point range. So again, like to see the 3-pointer dropping. But 5 personal fouls. And then spread offense around well with 6 double-digit scores. Already mentioned Jovic and Jaquez, but other double-digit scorers, Jimmy, Hero, Bam, Love. So great overall performance. On to the next one. Last game, Sunday, hosting the Raptors in a game that the Heat won again, 118 to 103. Injury report, same core 8 plus DeLon, though Kevin Love would get, he would leave early with, it was listed as an upper arm contusion. So Thomas Bryant would get in there and get some solid backup 5 minutes to produce pretty well. Recap for this one, Heat looked like they might have had the South Beach flu, really sluggish to start the game, but they rallied by the end of the first, tying the game at 24. And then after exchanging the lead a few times for the first half of the second quarter, so around like the 6-minute mark, the Heat busted out a 31-6 run to take a massive lead, up 21 going into the half. Good reminder, right? The end of the first quarter tied. By the end of the second quarter, they're up 21. So obviously everything swings that way, and from then on out, pretty much just cruising to the end. Raptors threatened a little bit, trimming the lead to 13 in the third. Heat responded with a 12-0 run to be back up 23 going into the fourth. No. Again, like I mentioned, right? Players don't want to tank, but the rest of their organization does, and the Heat definitely were like, no, we're the better team. We're just going to take this. Heat pushed the lead as much as 30 in the fourth, and it was only after the benches had been emptied and then the Raptors went on a 10-0 run that the score even looks, you know, a little bit better, with the Heat only winning by 15. Player of the game here, I actually give to Thomas Bryant. 18 points, 10 rebounds, 1 assist on 8 of 10 from the field. 0-1 from 3-point range, but I like that he takes it. 2-2 from the free throw line. Did all that in 23 minutes of work, because, you know, Bam doesn't have to play that much with the blowout. Love, like I mentioned, got injured a little bit earlier. So Thomas Bryant kept himself ready and then went in with 23 minutes and just produced. He's my player of the game. I think I am very much impressed by how he keeps himself ready and then maximizes the opportunities that he gets, as far as I see, without any sort of like complaining. So I love good locker room presences like that. Statistics from this game, won the field goal battle, 46 to 87, good for 53%, to the Raptors, 38 of 90, good for 42%. So big swing towards Miami just shooting way better. Most of that was points in the paint. Miami outscoring the Raptors in the paint 68 to 54. So plus 14 there helps a lot. And then the mention part before we finish this one up. Despite a solid 3-1 week and a chance to make it out even on the last day, the Heat didn't get any help from the other teams that they needed. So just run through real quick. There were certain scenarios where like the Magic would have to lose, and then it was the Pacers or Sixers would have to lose. And all three of those teams blew out their opponent on Sunday. So that's why, I mean, Miami got absolutely no help. And therefore, they end the regular season at 8th and going back to the play-in tournament. So given that Miami ends up in the same position as they were last year, trying to go through the play-in to get to the playoffs, it makes me ask the question, can they make a deep run through the playoffs like they did last year? And not to bury the lead, but essentially, yes, I think they can. But I think it depends on two big things. One is going to be Jimmy, and then the other is going to be, can they avoid Boston in the first round by winning tomorrow against Philly to play the Knicks? Because, let's be honest, the way that I see it, the conference is the Celtics and the field. And just because Miami has not performed up to par, the Philly has been injured, the Bucks are dealing with an injury right now with Giannis and haven't looked that great anyway, and then everybody else is like, you know, Knicks are injured, Magic are young, Cavs are unproven, Pacers are unproven, like, you know. But the one thing for certain, the scariest motherfucker in the conference are the Boston Celtics right now. So I want the Heat to avoid them, at least for the first round, because if you get the other way, right, you play the Knicks first, because the Knicks ended up at 2, so you win tomorrow, you play the Knicks in the second seed, and then you could play Boston in the conference finals. Not only would that be 2 series later on where they might be a little bit more worn down, but also that's 2 series where you can start to see if there's any cracks in them. So they, like the example that I used last year, the Boston Celtics versus the Atlanta Hawks, showed that they still had problems closing out games and closing out series. And that was something that eventually Miami used and to go up 3-0 and eventually win that game, that series in 7. So that's where my thinking is. Like, I think the Heat have a much better chance of beating the Celtics in the conference finals than they do in the first round. And then I think the Jimmy part is pretty self-explanatory. If Jimmy's great, then the Heat are going to be great. That's how it worked last year. But to tease out the question a little bit more and then talk about like some positives and negatives for could they or could they not, I want to mainly focus on 3 areas, which are going to be personnel differences from last year to this year, challenges to the way that they have been playing differences from last year to this year, and then just the difference in Jimmy from last year to this year. So starting off with personnel. So one of the big things for Miami's run last year was the play of Gabe Vincent and Max Strus. I mean, the biggest example that I can give for this, it was not playoff Jimmy that ultimately saved the Heat against the Bulls. It was Max Strus. So just right there, that was a guy that literally saved their season, is no longer on the team. That has to be a negative. And then Gabe Vincent just provided a bunch of big buckets. I think he might have even won one of those Celtics games, like maybe the first one or the third one, like off of some big buckets or some big daggers. If not that series in particular, one of the other series. So Gabe Vincent was vital. So they don't have those two important starters this year. And I know a lot of the other teams have been saying that ad nauseum, but they say it for a good reason. It is a true thing. And then also the Heat are without Kyle Lowry, who they traded midseason. And though Lowry was never the most productive player, he always brought a lot of like veteran savviness and would get those really good opportune charges or draw a foul on somebody or just like hit a big shot occasionally. Like he was still a productive, positive player for the Heat during the playoff run last year. I gotta still give him that as well. So this year, instead, they have a different mix, right? Rather than Kyle Lowry, we got Terry Rozier. Can provide a little bit more offense, a little bit quicker, fits certain things better, though not as savvy as Lowry is. We have Jaime instead of, I guess, maybe Gabe would be the comparison here, just because, like, more on ball, can get inside, defends a little bit. The shot, definitely not where Gabe's was. And then, you know, I guess instead of Max Strus, you have Nikola Jovic. We're providing you a little bit of the three-point shooting. The one-on-one defense is getting a little bit there, playmaking a little bit more, a little more size. Like, one of the things that did doom Miami deep into their playoff run last year was when they ran into Denver and there was just too much size and they couldn't work with it. I think that's a big reason why they have put so much into Jovic's development, because he's really, like, the only true 4 they have on the roster. And is also one of their best sources of size. Overall, like between those two groups, like if you say Lowry gave Vince Max versus Rozier, Jaime, Jovic, I do think that the group that Miami has this year, again, different roles, but is a better overall group in terms of like supporting what Bam and Jimmy need. And then other differences, Duncan was just starting to come on in the playoff run last year. This year, he's had a completely resurgent season up until these last few weeks when the back seems to have started to be a bother. So Duncan's kind of like it's a wash, right? We don't know. He wasn't, like, yes, he did help contribute last year. Yeah, the game 2, he helped win with a big fourth quarter performance in the finals. And he might still be able to get there this year if the little bit of rest is giving him enough time to get healthy. We just don't know if he's going to be healthy. And I guess for that, same thing for Rozier. And then last part for personnel differences is, has to be Tyler Hero. Though he did play in one game last year, he then injured his hand and was gone throughout the entire playoff run. And this year, he's about as healthy as he's been since probably the bubble, which, again, going through his playoff history real quick. Bubble run as a rookie, phenomenal. A 37-point game against the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, big reason why they won that series. Next year, against the Bucks, when they got swept, destroyed. 22 season, groin injury. 23 season, postseason, hand injury. So this is really like the first time we've seen him healthy with a team locked in, potentially, since the bubble. So this could be a big postseason for Tyler Hero. So to wrap up this part, from a personnel perspective, like, yes, they did take a few steps back, you know, losing Gabe, Lowry, Max. But overall, with, like, Rozier, Jaime, Jovic, Duncan, more closer to, like, resurgent than hopefully injured. And then Hero, crosses fingers, no freak injuries this time. Personnel-wise, I think the Heat are in a better position than they were last year. But depth has been talked about as a strength of this team all year long. So I think that fits in line with that. Next part would be challenges to play. So what I mean by that is, last year, the big problem in the regular season was their three-point shooting. The prior year, 21-22, they were top of the league or around top of the league in three-point shooting. Then the 22-23 season, they were 27th at 34.4% in the regular season. And then in the playoffs, that jumps all the way up to 38%, which is first in the playoffs with a large sample size because they went to the finals. Like, that wasn't just that's a nice little boost. No, they went massively better from three-point range, and that was a huge factor because now you can't collapse on those Jimmy drives or Bam drives because they kick out to shooters that are punishing you. So that big swing was a big reason why all of a sudden their offensive rating went from 25th at 112.3 in the regular season last year to 7th out of 16 teams, so about middle of the pack in the playoffs at 113.8. But again, Heat defense and then just the offensive improvement was just enough to all of a sudden tilt everything into their favor. This year, though, the three-point shooting has been really good. They're 12th at 37%, and the offensive rating is about what it was last year, 113.3, but that's only good for 21st this year, again, because a lot of teams have taken steps forward. You know, thinking like Pacers, Hawks, for example, right? The offensive teams this year, I think it was like the top three or four offensive teams this year in any other year would have been the highest one in NBA history. Like, this is an offensive boom. But the main point, though, was it felt like last year we weren't making threes in the regular season and that we had the capacity to, and then that proved true in the playoffs. And we made all the three, like all that came back. This year, we're already making threes at a really great clip. Doesn't really feel like there's that much room above for the three-point shooting to jump up at. So then that begs the question, what has been the problems this year? Well, it's been mainly health, point guard play, and then fourth quarter problems. So like I already mentioned with health, there's some concerns about Rozier and Duncan. But otherwise, this team is healthy. You know, especially you think like Tyler Hero, he missed half of the season. Now he's back. He's looking good going into the playoffs. Jaime looks like he's fully recovered from the groin injury and has started to break through the rookie wall. Like, there's reason to be optimistic for the most part about the health of the team. Especially if Rozier and Duncan can come back. And then that's a full 10-man rotation. Now we're having to worry about who to cut. But even in the meantime, still got an 8-man playoff rotation that Spoelstra can go to until those other players are ready. Miami already addressed the point guard play in the middle of the season by bringing in Terry Rozier. And also, they've gotten a little bit of a step forward in the playmaking department from Tyler Hero, who I think might still be the long-term, like, hey, can we grow this guy into a point guard kind of thing to have him play with alongside Bam. But at least for now, you know, he can be like a secondary playmaker or even run a bench unit as a primary playmaker. So point guard play, I think, has also been well addressed. And then it's just the fourth quarter problems. Because I don't know if y'all remember, like early in the year, Miami lost a lot of games by just blowing things in the fourth quarter. Which is kind of funny because the previous year, 2022-23, when they weren't making threes, the way that they won games was excellent fourth quarter execution. And that's why come playoffs, when all of a sudden they were making threes, it's like, hey, now we're making threes so we can keep up. And we're already great in the fourth quarter because we've been so all year. Yeah, then you saw the recipe for their success. So I guess this year, we're kind of asking for a little bit of the opposite, right? Like, the three-pointers have been there, but the fourth quarter execution hasn't. So maybe all of a sudden they could get that back on track. And there has been some positive signs in, like, February, March, where, like, it's been trending up. It's still not entirely positive. Like, if I remember right, March was a pretty bad net rating in the fourth quarter month for the Heat. But overall, moving in the right direction, so maybe it'll peak and be better in the playoffs. Like, that's definitely their area for opportunity. And I think might be a little symbiotic with some of the issues Jimmy Butler in particular has had, because he's usually our closer. So if he's struggling, it makes sense that we struggle in the fourth quarter. Get to him in a little bit. But just to wrap up the challenges to play part, right? Like, there are also, like, just like the personnel, right? This is not the same team that it was last year. There are significant personnel differences. Same thing this year. There are significant differences in the challenges and the reason why Miami ended up in the play-in that they will have to overcome in order to make a deep playoff run. And then the last part now, Jimmy Butler. It has to be said. I said him at the beginning, so then I could say it into the end and then talk about it here. We all saw what happened last year and how Jimmy was the biggest reason they made a deep playoff run. He turned into, like, the son of Michael Jordan incarnate or something like that, and obliterated the Bucks, struck so much fear into every team after that, that again, it opened up those easy shots for Max and Gabe and Duncan and everybody else to rain threes. He was the biggest reason Miami made their run last year. And one of the interesting things looking back on that last season is you can see how his production from both, like, traditional stats or advanced stats start to ramp up around February, March, April. That's why we had the meme, right? Oh, does this guy care about the regular season through January? And then February, March, oh, Jim VP, and then April, is this the second coming of Michael Jordan? Like, that was a meme because it's what literally happened last year. You see the production ramp up, and then it makes sense how it peaks when he's playing against the Bucks in the first round. This year, though, has not seen the ramp up. If anything, it looks like it stalled out, because, like, February, you start to see the same kind of uptick from 2022-23. But this time, though, March, April comes around and it flattens out, instead it keeps rising up. And it's easy to be pessimistic about why that's happening. Jimmy's 34 years old. He played a significant amount of his career under Tom Thibodeau, and then with the Heat, he has gone on several deep playoff runs. That does wear on the body. And therefore, you have to ask the question, okay, well, Father Time's undefeated. Could it be coming for Jimmy now? You know, that would be the negative view on it. A more positive view on it, maybe he's conserving more, like he's just at the age where it's like, all right, I can't even ramp up in the regular season. I got to save it just for the playoffs. Or maybe, again, trying to do a positive spin here, maybe he requires the intensity of the playoffs to really reach that level. Because one of the things that is also stuck in my mind from, like, that Bucks series last year was just Jimmy just constantly talking, just shit-talking the Bucks. You can't guard me. I'll just own you. And maybe it's only the lights of the playoffs that allow him to get into that mindset. So, like, he's trying to psych himself up now in the regular season, but in the back of his mind, he's like, nah, this still ain't anything compared to what I was doing against the Bucks last year under those lights. So, again, I'm trying to be positive here. Maybe he's at the point, like, he's still got a little left in the tank, but he's just got to save it for only the playoffs at this point. Regardless, I do think it has been a good sign this year that he has been shooting threes more consistently and at a better rate, in addition to Bam Adebayo shooting threes. Because if there's a positive that could help them out, it's that if both are shooting threes, then that could give a little bit more space. And sure, Jimmy might not be at kind of like an inverse of last year, right? Jimmy put so much pressure on the rim that it opened things up for the shooters. This year, and teams were willing to do that because during the regular season, Miami wasn't making threes. So this year, if teams are looking at this saying, hey, this is a team that does make threes at a good rate, and Jimmy and Bam are now spacing the floor, then they might open up a little bit more of the paint, give a little bit more room for Jimmy or Bam to get to work inside. I don't think we're at the point that we're going to see, like, 40-point bombs from Jimmy anymore, because that's where I think, like, Father Time has caught up to him. Like, he can't do that kind of output. But if he can get a few 30-point games, That could be enough to swing a few games towards Miami favor, ultimately win them the series, and it could be a big reason why the Miami Heat go deep into the playoffs. I just don't know if he's going to do that, which is what brings me back to the start of this segment where I asked the question, can the Heat make a deep playoff run this year? Yes. Personnel-wise, I think they're a little bit better. I think some of their problems, especially fourth quarter execution, are a little bit more solvable, especially in the playoffs. But it really just depends upon Jimmy, what they get from him. And then, like I mentioned, can they beat Philly to avoid the Celtics in the first round and have an easier path through the playoffs? So let's talk a little bit more about the play-in tournament and how things are going to work. So real quick for the schedule, tomorrow the Heat will be at Philly. The winner gets 7th seed where they will play the New York Knicks in the first round. The loser will host the winner of Bulls-Hawks, which will also be playing tomorrow, Wednesday night. And that second game will be on Friday. The loser from that game Friday is completely out of the playoffs. And then the winner, they might not be much further behind. The winner gets the 8th seed and plays the Celtics in the first round. So not too hard a schedule to get a grasp of, at least. So looking at the injury report for the Miami as of this morning, Kevin Love was listed with an upper arm contusion, which, real quick, if you don't know, contusion is just the medical term for bruise. So I think it was just more so a precautionary thing, like, hey, man, you got to go out there, play a few minutes, you got bruised. Just go ahead and sit. We need you Wednesday. We'll let Thomas Bryant, he kept himself ready. And we'll let him get some minutes to make sure he has a little rhythm in case we need him as well. Because I do think this could be a game that they could use Thomas Bryant in. Then Duncan Robinson back and Terry Rozier neck are listed as questionable as of this recording. So we'll just have to pretty much wait and see what happens there. There seems to be some optimism that they could play. But at the same time, like neck injuries, back injuries, those aren't ones you want to mess around with. Just not. But this takes us now, finally, to the game tomorrow night, Wednesday, at the Philadelphia 76ers, a Sixers team that finished 47-35, 7th overall in the East. The regular season matchup between the Sixers and Heat, 2-2 through the regular season, though only the last game was the one that was even the closest-ish to healthy, because they had Embiid, but I think that was the last game before Tyler Hero came back, so pretty much neither of these teams have played each other as healthy as they're going to be come tomorrow. So that makes looking back at the regular season, even harder than it usually is. So maybe look back historically. Well, the last time these two teams played each other in like a significant matchup was the 2022 playoff second round, Heat 1-6. But that was also when Philly had James Harden, and for the Heat side, they were still doing like Vincent, Strus, Lowry. Yeah, because Lowry came back during that series because he got injured in the Hawks series, I remember now. But just to say, it's been a few years since then as well. So I don't think like even that could relate so much to what it is here. But there's a little bit of animosity. Like, I always remember the thing from that Philly series was Jimmy Butler walking to the tunnel, Tobias Harris over me. And sure enough, that surfaced on social media a few times this week. So I do like a little bit of history like that. Looking at the injury report for the Sixers side of things, Embiid did rest the last game, but, I mean, come on, he's going to be there Wednesday. The Philly knows as well as Miami knows. Neither of these teams want to lose this and risk having to play the Celtics in the first round. That could be pretty much the end of the season right there. So both teams are going to go all out. It is of note, though, that they are missing Covington for what seems to be the entire season. As I understand, he's still a good like rotation player, so that could be something. And then they had two other rotation players, but they, I believe, are questionable at worst, so probably expected to play. So I just want to go over three quick areas of importance for Miami. First is going to be making Embiid work. Second, got to slow down Tyrese Maxey. And then third is actually just more of a hodgepodge, just other keys is the way that I phrased it. Because the two most important things, and this was especially what Miami learned in that last game against Philly, for the most part, they shut down Philly. And that was a Philly team that was mostly healthy. Except for Embiid and Maxey, who combined, I think, for like, what was it, like 60 points or something like that. But they were the reason that they won. So, therefore, it makes the most sense you start there. So, making Embiid work. And I think this is mainly just trying to wear him down physically, because essentially he had to almost rush back from an injury. And yes, he did get the last game of the regular season off, but he did still play like immediately heavy minutes, you know, 7 games straight. I think you should test his conditioning a little bit. So with that, you got like Bam Adebayo, who, especially during that 2022 season, playoff season, did a phenomenal job of denying him the ball, fronting him on his posts, like just tipping the ball out, making those entry passes hard. Big reason towards Miami winning that series. So I think one of the big difference, though, is now Nick Nurse is running the Sixers. And I have a little bit more respect for him as, like, for lack of a better term, the chess playing that coaches typically do in these kind of matchups. Not that I think he's any better than Spoelstra, but significantly closer than, say, like a Doc Rivers was during that 2022 playoff run. Which is to say, I expect Nurse to put Embiid in better positions where it's going to be harder for Bam to deny the ball. Like, throwing Embiid the ball out on the three-point line, right? Like, Bam's not going to front that and then give up all that space behind him. It's a little more when you got the baseline behind you not too far. And you're trying to sandwich him between the baseline. But, like, at three-point line, nah. So, might be some dribble handoff stuff for Embiid. Or even just one-on-one face-up from the three-point line. Like, Bam's going to have a harder time than he did during that series. But I do think Bam Adebayo is up to the task. So at least there's that. Then after him, it's going to be like the zone defense, where I think that's going to be a lot of what the Heat are going to do when Kevin Love is filling in for the backup. So that way they can try to hide Kevin Love a little bit and not have him out so much on the perimeter trying to go around and follow Embiid. But like, then again, I guess Embiid's not necessarily the quickest, so maybe Love could do that as well. But I do know eventually that the Heat are going to use the zone defense against the Sixers. And like I mentioned earlier, I think this could be a game, especially with Embiid's tendency to get other players in foul trouble. Like if Bam or Kevin Love get into foul trouble, I think this could be a game where Thomas Bryant, hey, keep yourself ready, man, because this could be a game where you get some minutes because somebody else is going to get foul trouble. And if Bryant can hold up, all the better for the Heat, because then they have another body that can absorb fouls against Embiid. Though he is a really good free throw shooter. But it can still wear him down. And that could be part of it, right? Can you wear Embiid down throughout the game? Between the way that you're defending him, between maybe, you know, being more physical with him, sending to the line, and then when he's on defense, try to pull him out, make him defend in space. You know, go five out, do really high pick and roll, so Embiid is either dropped into the paint, which is going to open up other opportunities for the Heat players, or he's going to have to come all the way out to the three-point line and just really get that cardio in. And that could wear him down by the time you get to the fourth quarter. Again, the ultimate idea here is to make him work and then see if his conditioning holds up. That's the most important thing, but the second most important thing is then to slow down Tyrese Maxey. And I think to go back to the way part earlier this episode where I was talking about like why Caleb Martin was starting, I think, alongside Tyler Hero, I think it is because they foresaw that between like Rozier and Duncan's injuries and maybe want to let them come off the bench and not have to be too hard, that if they were going to play Philly, because it looked very likely that if the Heat were going to have a playing opponent, it was going to be Philly, that this is what that was for. Get Caleb in the starting in a starting unit, get them a few reps, so then you can roll that starting lineup out and then have Caleb defend Maxey one-on-one, because you need somebody fast to defend that dude. And I think one of the things that really hurt the Heat in that last game against Philly is Maxey really got going early. And so by the time that the Heat defense like really got engaged and was limiting Maxey from getting to the rim, well, he already had it going. And then by then he's got the confidence, he's feeling good. Then the jumper starts to drop. And then there wasn't anything the Heat could do, and he ends up scoring 37 while the Heat lose the game. So, you know, do your work a little bit earlier with Caleb in the starting unit so then Maxey can't get going and then more pressure gets put onto Embiid to produce. So I think you see Caleb getting the one-on-one if you're just going man-man for the starting lineup. But then to go back to the Heat zone, right? Caleb Martin is going to be out there at the top of the zone, probably Haywood Highsmith up there at the other part of the 2-3 zone. And I think they could do a lot of damage to Maxey, again, trying to limit him, make things difficult, make him give the ball up to Embiid and try to make that dude work more. And then the last part to this is I think why DeLon Wright has gotten more minutes most recently, especially over Patty Mills, not just because of the production standpoint, because I think he's been overall a more productive player than Patty Mills, but also because of how useful he could be in a matchup like this, where if you don't have Rozier and Duncan because they're so little injured, you bring DeLon Wright off the bench, and it's like, hey, guess what, Tyrese Maxey? You get to choose between Caleb Martin one-on-one, DeLon Wright one-on-one off the bench, Or you get the zone where you got some combination of Caleb, Haywood, maybe DeLon all at the top, maybe Jimmy as well, all at the top of that 2-3 zone, just there to mess with you. So I think no matter what, Tyrese Maxey is also going to have himself a hell of a time. And again, these are the two most important players for the Sixers. It makes the most sense. If you limit those two, that could very well just swing the game to Miami by itself. But other keys for this game, which is the last part here. Winning the turnover battle is going to be tough. The Sixers are extremely good, like both at limiting turnovers and then forcing opponent turnovers. I think they're like first in their own and then fourth in opponents, something like that. But the Heat can at least keep it close by watching their passing lanes. Philly likes to gamble and get steals a lot for very similar reasons why Miami does it, where it's like, hey, if you get out, poke a ball, you get out into a fast break, you're getting fast break points, you're getting points off turnovers, you're getting a turnover, and you're getting an easy bucket, like all in one play, this big momentum swing. So for the Heat, it's going to be limiting those opportunities. Like when you pass the ball, like make sure you make a good pass. Don't just, no lackadaisical passing, moving the ball with intention, all those good coach speak words. Other keys, driving hard to the rim. Philly still fouls a lot, so that could be easy buckets, easy ways to keep the offense going so that way the offense isn't bogged down and not produce anything for, you know, several minutes as they do at times. But then also it lets you get your defense set up, limits Philly's fast breaks, and forces them to play a half-court defense where, again, you could try to wear down Embiid. And then lean on some of the fast break opportunities themselves, especially like Nikola Jovic. Philly is still bottom 10 in fast break defense, I think in part because of Embiid, and just at his size, it can be a little difficult for him to get back in transition. So can the Heat take advantage themselves of like, hey, Jimmy, poke a ball out of the passing lane and go get some easy fast break points. Hey, Jovic, just grab the defensive rebound and go and see who's ahead of you. This is a Heat team that is always struggling to score points, so you got to look at what the opponents do badly. In this case, Philly bottom 10 in fast break point and opponent fast break points per game. And that's something that you can try to exploit, even if it's just a little bit. Just another bucket or two, and that could be the difference. Because ultimately, and to finish this up, I think this game is going to be close. I mean, the last game against Philly was very close as well. I think they ended up winning by 4, but it was like tied down the stretch as well. But it's going to be close. I think these are two really good teams. I would say that outside of Boston is the clear best team. It's probably the Heat and the Sixers as the scariest teams after the Celtics. Again, because Bucks are injured and everybody else is either injured or unproven. So this is going to be a serious matchup, but I do think the Heat can edge this out and win it, get the Knicks in the first round, and set themselves up for an easier playoff run. Regardless, I will be back on Thursday either to preview versus the Knicks for the first round of the playoffs, or to preview Bulls, Hawks, and hope for the best there. But I do thank you for hanging around today. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture off of X/Twitter. Also, check out the other great shows we have at OTG Basketball and the various ones, Brooklyn Buzz, Celtics Lab, Full Access Pacers, always doing great stuff over there. Links for everything are in the show notes as usual. I'll be back Thursday, 2 days. So until then, hope y'all have a great one, Heat Nation.